CJ did a great job with that reading from Psalm 66. That's not CJ. It's a song of praise. It's a psalm that gets us excited from the very beginning. Shout for joy to God, all the earth. And it sets a tone, doesn't it? It sets a tone when we begin our worship that way. Zed got us off to a great beginning today. It sets a tone that says, this is what we're here for, to praise God for who He is and for what He's done. And this psalm begins on that note. Now, one of the things that I admire about the book of Psalms, it's a big book, there's 150 different songs of different lengths, but one of the things that I admire is the way that it mixes the depths of despair with the highs of celebration. Not every psalm has the congregation jumping out of their seats. Many of them, if we were the ones writing those words and living those experiences, would have us in tears as we put pen to paper. Even Psalm 23, which we know so very well, acknowledges that at times we walk not beside still waters, but through the valley of the shadow of death. And so we have this sense of reality throughout the book of Psalms, that its life is not always rosy, regardless of where you live. And so one of the things that Psalms does for us is to join us in our hurts, to join us in our struggles, to ask tough questions, and then to point us to God. So it doesn't say, hey, get over it. Put on a happy face. Just move on. Psalm says, no, life is hard. People are unkind. Things hurt. The body gets weak. And it's okay to feel what you're feeling. But it always points us to God and says, tell God about those times. Tell God about what you're feeling, because God is there with you in that difficulty. It also reminds us that not only is God there with us in our struggles, but God is the light at the end of the tunnel. And so the book of Psalms finishes with this invitation for all of creation to join in praising God. Let the trees clap their hands. Let the birds sing. Let the flowers of the field do their thing. That's a paraphrase. And so all of creation is to participate in rejoicing before God. And that's the light at the end of the tunnel. But from Psalm 1 to Psalm 150, there's a journey to be taken. And it's not always an easy journey. And as we work our way through Psalm 66 today, I hope that even if you're here with a heavy heart, that we can point you to God today. And so we begin, shout for joy. Say to God, how awesome are your deeds. Sing out the glory of His name. Make His praise glorious. And then in verse 5, the psalmist offers this invitation. Come and see what God has done. Come and remember, come and review, come and hear what God has done, not to Israel and on a global scale. And so from verses 6 through 9, the psalmist lists the good things that God has done for Israel. And he begins with the Exodus. He specifically references there in verse 6, he turned the sea into dry land and they passed through the waters on foot. The Exodus is the seminal event in the life of the nation of Israel. And so just as Thanksgiving in this country maybe takes our minds back to certain historical events, and they help give us a sense of identity, as a nation. Likewise, Israel does the same thing, and they have this event, and the event is the Exodus, the birth of a nation, not Abraham's birthday. You sort of think, oh, Abraham's birthday, that's the birth of the nation. But no, it's the Exodus, where God does great things, leads them out through the seas, through dry land, leads them out from slavery. And so they don't just wait until Passover to celebrate that. It's in their songs, it's in their stories, it's just part of who they are. Whenever they question, are we God's people, does God care for us, they go back to the Exodus and say, remember what God did. And interestingly, Egypt remained a world power. From the time of the Exodus all the way through, really until Jesus. It was only at the time of Jesus that Cleopatra, shortly before Jesus' birth, that Cleopatra was killed, that Rome overwhelmed Egypt and totally took control of that. And so Egypt was this world power that whole time. And so Israel could, at any moment, could look over their shoulder and say, look how great and how strong and how powerful Egypt is. And yet our God defeated them. And He brought us out of them. And He made us who we are today. And so come and see what God has done, His awesome deeds for mankind. And so He does that for the nation. He rules forever by His power. His eyes watch the nations. Let not the rebellious rise up against Him. God helped us. He continues to rule the nations. But then it transitions in verse 8, and has, we see up there, He has preserved our lives. He's kept our feet from slipping. That God doesn't just involve Himself in world affairs. Okay? Think of that. The most powerful people in this country, whoever you think they might be, they have a lot to say about the economy of the nation. They have a lot to say about relationships of the United States with Mexico or Canada or any other country in the world. And they move on that global level. But they have very little to say about your day-to-day life. If you slip, if you twist an ankle, if you have to go to the hospital, they don't really care what level of care you receive. They worry about the system, the health system in the nation, the cost of the health system, how they're going to pay for it. There's a whole lot of stuff that they're worried about, but it's not you and your ankle when you slip tomorrow. And which doctor is going to see you and how long you have to wait in the emergency room and the level of stress that creates for you. I mean, that's just not on their plate. But we're told here that God is the God who brought us out of Egypt, who continues to rule the nations, who worries about global concerns, and has preserved our lives and kept our feet from slipping. Shout for joy. How awesome are your deeds. But then in verse 10, the psalmist makes a change in the direction of his song. We see there, for you, God, tested us. You refined us like silver. And maybe you're thinking, oh, well, that's not quite so exciting as keeping me from slipping. But it still doesn't sound too bad. Okay, I mean, we take tests, we do that, we get stronger. Go to the gym, test ourselves, get stronger. But look at the next items on the list. You brought us into prison and laid burdens on our backs. It's like, oh, well, now this is getting serious, God. That really doesn't sound good. I took this verse 12, out of the Contemporary English Version. I think it's a little more descriptive. says, "You sent war chariots to crush our skulls. We traveled through fire and through floods." The NIV is really very bland when it says, "You let people ride over our heads." I think this is more what it has in mind here. I mean, there's been bad stuff happen. Whether it be a testing, whether it be the imprisonment, there really isn't like our prison system. I mean, it's usually you've been captured in a battle of some sort most of the time, or enslaved in some way. And so the testing and the purifying at this point take on life-threatening dimensions. And yet, the psalmist just kind of throws this in there. Like, God, you almost took our lives from us. And then he continues, and for you and I, that might be like, we just want to hang out here. Like, God, what was going on? Can we go back and have a conversation about this time, God? I didn't appreciate this, God. That skull crushing, that fire, that flood, God. We've seen fires, right? We've had fires in California. There have been big fires in Australia. I mean, we know how devastating that is. We've seen floods and the just the tragedy that comes with them. And so, although the overall feel of the psalm is upbeat, remember that praise, shout for joy all to God, all the earth at the beginning? Like, that's still the overall feel of the psalm, but it takes this twist, this left turn towards reality. And we weren't expecting that. I don't know about you, but I like to keep my good times in the good time box and my bad times in the bad time box. When those boxes just get mixed up in the middle, it gets all confusing. Am I supposed to be happy or am I supposed to be sad? How am I supposed to feel about this? How am I supposed to feel about that person? How am I supposed to feel about that God? And so what the psalmist has done to this point is create two lists. We saw in the video earlier the two lists, but one of those lists was a list of things I wish I had. And a list of the good things I wish I had, and a list of the bad things that I know I have. And the psalmist list is different. The psalmist has two lists of things that he has. His life has good things from God, and his life has bad things. And he says they're from God because God is in control. And so he takes this list, he creates this list all the way down to verse 12. And then in verse 13, he says, "I'm going to bring this list to the temple." He says, "Life has struggles. Sometimes we're defeated, sometimes we're crushed, but God can work through all of this. And those defeats are not the end of the story." Verse 12 concludes with the phrase, "but." Don't you love that when you read through that list of terrible things and you get to the end and you say, "but"? Because it means something's about to change. The narrative, the flow of the story is about to switch. It's about to move. "But you brought us to a place of abundance." We didn't stay in those places. The psalmist certainly endured the hardships. He didn't enjoy them. They were hard. But he writes this song from the other side of those hardships. He's come through them. And as he reflects, as he looks back, he can see that God improved him through the struggles. That God's brought him to a better place. And we see this message consistently in Scripture. That God uses hardship as a means of building character so that we're transformed further into His image. And it's never fun when you're in the middle of it. Like, you're having a hard time at work. Somebody I've been talking to over the last month or so, and they're just like, you know, work is an unpleasant place for me to be right now. And I'm looking at another job. I had an interview last week and just want to be somewhere else. They're changing the company. The people that are in charge are foul mouthed. It's just an unpleasant work environment. It's dragging me down. You know, and to say, oh, isn't that great that God's transforming you into His image and putting you through that hardship? You know, and every time I say that, they're like, woo, yeah, and they leave so happy. No, they don't. I don't say that, and they don't do that. Because it's still a hardship, right? And they want to be somewhere else. But on the other hand, we can all look back and say, that thing I went through, that time I went through, it left its mark on me. And some of those marks still hurt, but the way that I've come to live with them, the way I've come to give them to God, the way that God has used those marks and those experiences to bless others, I can see that good has come from it. In the book of James, we read this when we did the series in James earlier this year, but James 1 begins with these verses, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters." I just don't think James was into a counseling. Like, you know, he's a good writer, but he didn't have a counseling practice. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." It's hard, but it gets us somewhere, and it doesn't last forever. And so, with his lists in hand, he's got his two lists, the good list, the bad list. He's been brought to this place of abundance, and as he reflects on his life, the psalmist comes to worship God. "You brought us to a place of abundance. When I was in trouble," this is an interesting verse. I don't know if you've noticed it there, but in verse 14, he says, or 13 and 14, "I will come to your temple with burnt offerings and fulfill my vows to you." What vows are they, psalmist? They're the vows I made, vows my lips promised when my mouth spoke, when I was in trouble. There's a popular social media meme, you know, when your football team is losing and then they come back and they win in an unexpected fashion. And I've seen preachers will then put up on their Facebook page a message and it'll say, "All those promises you made to God in the first half, tomorrow is the time to deliver on them. See you at 10:30. God, just get my team over the line. I'll be there on Sunday. I'll sing those songs. And the psalmist, that's kind of what he's saying happened, right? I was in hardship. My skull was being crushed. There was a fire. There was a flood. And he says, "God, I cried out to you and I said, I will do what you want. I'll respond to you. I'll honor you. I'll worship you. I'll be faithful to you." And then, unlike many of those football fans, he delivers on it. It says, "God, I'm coming to worship you. I'm bringing my lists. I'm laying them down before you. I'm fulfilling my vows because you are God." And so the worship, having survived the hardship, is praise and thanksgiving. "Shout for joy to God, all the earth," he says. And in verse 16, we see the final movement of this psalm. The psalmist invites people, invites his neighbors, invites the people that live in his town or anyone that hears this song. He says, "Come and hear this account of what God has done in my life. Come and hear, all of you who fear God. Let me tell you what He has done for me." And this is really a natural movement because nobody's twisting his arm. there's nothing here that says the priests, when I made those vows and I went to worship at the temple, the priests got hold of me before I made my sacrifice. They twisted my arm and they said that I had to go out and knock on 50 doors and invite them to the temple. And once I'd done that, then they would accept my sacrifice and I'd be able to worship God. There's nothing like that going on here. He's just saying, God, you have been so good to me. I want to invite everybody to hear about it. Come and listen, world, to what God has done for me. Let me tell you. Because when the psalmist reflects on his life, when he looks at his two lists of the good and of the bad, he sees God's fingerprints on each list. And he writes a song and invites others to listen because he naturally wants them to experience the goodness of God that he has experienced. And so on this final slide, there's your invitation. But on the final slide that I have here, I map out what is really an outline from this Psalm of Thanksgiving. And it's not the outline for all Thanksgiving, but it's an outline of the process that this psalmist went through to give thanksgiving to God. He begins with praise. He lists the reasons to praise. I mean, God is worthy of our praise because He's God. But God also engages and interacts with His people in a way that we can acknowledge and say, yes, you are worthy of praise. But the psalmist is real and he says, I've also been through hardships. And God, I'm not afraid to talk to you about those too. And he reflects then on God's provision in those hardships. And he's able to express that. And I think that's one of our challenges is to sometimes we just want to forget the hard times. We want to leave them behind us. Or if we remember them, we don't want to say, how did God help me? It's difficult to talk about that. It's just an unpleasant experience. But the psalmist is able to reflect and say, God provided for me because God led me to a place of abundance. And then he's ready to worship, having gone through this period of reflection. He's ready to worship and invite others to come and to hear what God has done. You have a story that can encourage others. God has worked in your life in a way that is different from the way He's worked in my life. And your story reveals God in a way that my story doesn't. Your hardships are different from my hardships. And so as we exchange those stories, as we listen to one another, then we see different faces, different aspects of God and how He works in the world. If you'd like to take a next step this week, it's a busy week, right? I understand that. But there are a couple of things that you could do to help you get in a frame of mind for Thanksgiving. One is that you could just say, commit to reading this psalm every day. This is my Thanksgiving psalm. I'm going to read it each day this week. And maybe you could use a different translation every day. And you're like, Peter, I've only got one Bible. But there are websites like BibleGateway.com. And you can just look up a different translation every day and just get a different perspective on it. Sometimes the different wordings can be helpful. Same Bible, different translation, whatever you do, if you commit to reading it each day this week, I think you'll be encouraged. The second option, or a second thing you could do, is to make two lists. To sit down for, 15 minutes, reflect on your year, and say, God, it's Thanksgiving. But I'm thankful for good things, and I'm thankful I've made it through bad things. I'm thankful that you've been with me in all of those events. And so be real about what have been the struggles this year. as well as being real about the blessings that you've received. I think we're wired, different personalities are wired different ways, that we want to go one way or the other. Right? Just like the Israelites back in that first video, you know, it's like instead of focusing on where God's brought us, you know, what God's brought us through, we're focused on what we're missing. You know, they're just grumbling and complaining. And some of us are like that. I'm not pointing fingers. Maybe it's just some of us at some times, you know, when we're down, like everything's down. And we can't see the goodness. And there it's important for us to make that good list. But there are others of us that are just so sickeningly optimistic about everything that we need the discipline of sitting down and saying, no, there's been hard stuff happen. And God's been with me there as well. So that's why I think we all need to make those, can benefit from making those two lists and bringing them to God in worship. Shout for joy to God, all the earth. Sing the glory of His name. Make His praise glorious. If we can pray for you, if we can encourage you, if you're in one of those hard times, then we would love to just support you. The psalmist wrote a song about his hardships, and it wasn't a solo. It was a song that the congregation sang. And so if you're going through difficulties, we would love to sing your song with you and support you in your prayer and in your walk. We're going to stand and sing. You can come and let me know what's on your heart at this time.